Today on The Lab Report, we're going to talk to Dr. Deanna Minnick.
Oh, you know her and you love her.
She's pretty much like the best.
Yep.
The world of medicine can be challenging. Clinicians and patients are always looking for more options, more effective treatments, and in the end, more answers. Functional and integrative medicine focuses on addressing root causes of disease. Here at Genova Diagnostics, we've watched this field evolve and grow for over 35 years. We've not only adapted, we've led. Join us as we talk about functional medicine, laboratory testing, and optimizing health. Welcome to The Lab Report.
You know, it just occurred to me that we just welcome them with the intro, and then we welcome them again when we come in.
It's a lot of welcoming.
Hello.
Hi, everyone. This is The Lab Report.
Welcome.
Oh.
Welcome, Patty Devers.
Thanks, Michael Chapman. Welcome to you, too.
Thanks. Happy to be here. Super excited to talk about functional medicine, integrative therapeutics, specialty lab testing, and whatever else may come up today.
Good point. And this is a Genova Diagnostics podcast. And if you like what you hear, you can go to iTunes, Spotify, subscribe, download, rate, review.
If they like what they hear. I mean, if.
When.
That's
you
right.
Like what
yeah,
you
that's
hear.
Right. Yeah. Just, you know, and you could also connect with our show by emailing podcast@gdx.net. Maybe you got a little feedback. Maybe you got a question of the day. Yeah. I don't know what you have, but if you have it, just feel free to email it to podcast@gdx.net. And that is what I have to say with respect to that.
I'm glad. Thank you for that. And today, we have a guest on that probably everyone knows, right? I can't believe it's been this long and we haven't had her on here.
It's a crime.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm ashamed.
We should be arrested for that.
Well, it's Dr. Deanna Minnick, for those of you who don't know.
Yes. And that should be enough. Enough said right there.
Boom.
Because you should know who Dr. Deanna Minnick is. She is a powerhouse in the field of nutrition. She's a author. She's, you know, we'll go over all the things that she is. But I'm excited to talk to her.
She's just a nice person.
She's a good person.
Yeah.
It's very true. And not only just a nutritionist, I mean, she dabbles in the worlds of psychology, spirituality, connectivity, mindfulness.
Art.
It's all wrapped up in this one awesome package that is Deanna Minnick. So with that being said, we should just talk to her, right?
Let's go. Well, Michael, I'm really excited to have Dr. Deanna Minnick on
the
show
today.
I know. She's a friend of ours, which is super awesome. But in addition to being our friend, she's also an internationally recognized teacher, author, scientist, and speaker. She has more than 20 years of experience in the fields of nutrition and functional medicine, including clinical practice, research, product formulation, writing, and education. Her doctoral PhD research focused on essential fatty acid absorption and metabolism, and her Master of Science degree allowed her to explore the health benefits of the colorful plant-based carotenoids. She has authored 6 books on health and wellness and over 15 scientific publications. Currently, she is faculty for the Institute for Functional Medicine and the University of Western States. She has developed an online certification program for health professionals so they can apply the color-coded 7 systems of full-spectrum health in their practice. Her lectures are heard by patients and practitioners throughout the world. Dr. Minnick's passion is teaching a whole self approach to nourishment and bridging the gaps between science, spirituality, and art in medicine.
Nice.
And with that, welcome, Deanna, to the Lab Report.
Yeah, welcome.
Yay. Hello. Hey. Nice to be here talking with both of you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, my first question is, many of us are familiar with your work through your website and your books and through the biotransformation module at IFM, where you focus on incorporating the rainbow, both in people's diets as well as in people's lives. Can you talk a little bit about how you really came to this concept of how color can change our lives?
You bet. Yeah, you're right. I mean, color is such a huge part of everything that I'm teaching. And oftentimes people will hear me say, eat the rainbow. It sounds very simple. Yet there's a lot of science underneath that statement. So how did I come to that? Well, I would say it's kind of a hybridized process of my own personal journey. So being in nutrition for as long as I have, so I have a master's and a PhD in nutrition-related fields. So one of the things I noticed during my graduate school days, I began researching carotenoids. Carotenoids are the colorful red, orange, yellow, and even some green pigments that are found in plant foods. And I had a whole research project on that. It took me 3 years to do that research during my master's. And so what I was realizing in the midst of this swirl about nutrition and how butter good, butter bad, you know, it's just like, it would just move like the wind. And so one of the things I was finding being buried in the stacks of literature is that one thing that I didn't think that most people could arm wrestle was the power of phytonutrients. Mm-hmm. And many of these phytonutrients are colorful. So there was that. And being that I had started with a research lineage in that area, I continued to work with Dr. Jeffrey Bland and others to really get into the research on them. Like, what is it about these phytonutrients? Why should they be having the center stage and not so much perhaps the macronutrients, which that was always an uneven, I would say, split of attention. You know, most people get involved with where their calories are coming from, but they're not looking at the more sophisticated measures of what food is actually doing at the level of the cell, like functionally speaking. You know, they just get caught up in the energy sources. Where's their protein coming from? Mm-hmm. Right. So I wanted to take it deeper. I wanted to go to the common denominator of where most people can benefit. And so I'm not wedded to a dietary dogma. I'm not wedded to being vegan, vegetarian, keto, paleo, whatever label we want to affix to ourselves. Mm-hmm. It was more a gradual process of first seeing this in the research, noting what was out there, what were the issues. And then on the side, personally, I have had my own healing path with having health conditions, like most of us in the health field. You know, we kind of get into this because we've got something going on.
Yeah, physician, heal thyself.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things that happened to me is I began painting. I began painting huge canvases with very bright color, and I realized how much that was helping me. So I think it really spawned from two rivulets, but both of them were somewhat interconnected because they were coming through me, you know, my professional work and research, and then my personal path of healing through color. Color is medicine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you also, you know, just recently wrote the book, The Rainbow Diet, where you go into this quite a bit. And you also wrote a review article titled A Review of the Science of Colorful Plant-Based Food and Practical Strategies for Eating the Rainbow. So you can talk a little bit about how you came to that and just what the science was underpinning this. I mean, it's like you said, it's easy to talk about eating the rainbow, but it's really interesting when you dig into
the science
of it.
Right.
Yes. And I got so enamored with the science and I started to track the science based on colors. So I would be looking at certain plant food compounds that corresponded to foods that had a red color or an orange color, yellow, green, or blue purple. Those were kind of my big buckets, which essentially formed the rainbow.
Yeah.
So there are some token compounds for each of those colors. And in that scientific paper, what I was writing about there is, you know, with a science mind, I'm always looking for patterns. Like what is the pattern recognition? If we look at tomatoes and strawberries and cranberries and watermelon, what is there a common thread? What does the literature show us? And overall, the literature would say that fruits and vegetables and plant-based foods in general are really important for reducing inflammation, increasing antioxidants in the body, and even helping with measures of resilience and stress response. And so going further into that, it's like, well, why? Mm-hmm. What are these different compounds doing? So that kind of led me on this path of carving out the rainbow diet and writing that scientific paper, because even though I was saying that so many times in so many presentations, I felt like I needed to give some substance to what I was saying as it related to these individual colors.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. I love that because we've heard you say that, eat the rainbow. We say that all the time now, right? But in addition to just nutrition in general, you've also done a lot of research into the area of nutrigenomics. And we know that there's a lot of people out there getting some of those genetic tests that you can get at home. So can you speak to how nutrition, whether it's adequate or inadequate, can impact our genes and why this concept is relevant to genetic testing?
Well, one of the things that I think happened in the 21st century, so I was in the nutrition field in the 20th century, and I would say that there was a radical shift moving into the 21st century, especially when we got to 2003 and the Human Genome Project was in some ways finalized and started to make its way out into the mainstream. And one of the things that happened with nutrition was that we went from generalized dietary guidelines in the 20th century into morphing into much more of a personalized nutritional approach. And one of the ways that we got there was through genomics. And so that became like a hot button. It was
right.
Everything was genomics. And then we started to see companies like 23andMe offering this online. And even today, most consumers can get a direct-to-consumer type of test in which they can get certain SNPs sequenced.
Yeah.
And so this became, I would say, part of the emergence of personalized nutrition and help people to feel like they were an individual and that it's not just one diet for all people, that there's some delineation as to why that individual needs certain nutrients more than perhaps another person. So I think that there's a place for genetic testing. I also think that it needs to be contextualized within the larger scope of functional biomarkers, symptoms, taking an adequate history of a patient. I don't think, you know, I think some clinicians have really fallen back on it as their ultimate go-to. Because it can become very simple, like, okay, this person has a SNP in this methylation sequence, or they have this neurotransmitter SNP, so let's just give you X, Y, and Z. It becomes very formulaic. But I think what we do know is that genes don't work like that. There can be crosstalk. There is the whole epigenetic overlay that we need to consider. Like, our genes are not static, even though they give us a sense of our constitutional template. They don't ultimately predict every response. I think our biochemistry and physiology is way more sophisticated than just looking at a sketch by number with genetics, You know, I think that there's a lot more there, but I think it can be helpful, you know, because I do teach for the Environmental Health Advanced Practice Module for IFM. We do acknowledge the role of certain SNPs in how the body processes and eliminates certain things, right? Because, you know, a lot of these genes came out of pharmacokinetics, like how we can optimize the excretion and get these things out of the body. So I think that there's a place for it. I just think we have to look at the amount of emphasis we do place on it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's what we hear a lot on the phone is, or some clinicians just kind of replace what they're doing just with genetic tests and start to treat. But we know that just doing, you know, 23andMe doesn't obviate your need to do these other things like a history or to do the one or the NutriVal to actually look at a nutritional assessment.
Exactly. And that can really nicely interface with telling you how functional your genes are, because just because somebody is heterozygous for a certain gene doesn't mean that it's not functional and everybody has different rates of function. And how do we determine that? We determine that through biomarkers and through the status by looking at nutrients, and you know, we're pretty complex beings,
right? And people forget that. So, I think I'm glad you pointed that out,
For sure. And we talk about that a lot with methylation and MTHFR, and how you know you can have a particular susceptibility, but then that you can also compensate for that, whether you have a you know, depending on what your diet is, what other epigenetic factors that might be modulating the gene, you can completely compensate for that. So, not everyone needs to be taking a methylfolate just to just because they have a SNP.
Kudos here to Genova, because I was so excited when the methylation panel came out, because for so long, so many practitioners were taking the hammer to the nail of just MTHFR and just saying, oh, you need more folate, you need more 5-methyltetrahydrofolate, and that's it, end of story. Well, that wasn't solving a lot of people's problems. And when you start to look at the more sophisticated biochemistry of these three rings and how they all play together, and not just looking at MTHFR upstream, and not just looking at SAM or SAMe or even glutathione, but really looking in between through all of the different metabolites, through the different cofactors, through the different enzymes. And that, I mean, I'm not deliberately tooting the horn of Genova here to, just because I'm on a Genova podcast.
But you can. You can do it. Go ahead. Don't be scared.
I think it's brilliant, and it's what the field needed to give much more context and not to have such a simplified, you know, it's kind of in that old pill for an ill type model of, okay, we have one SNP, having more of this substance will make the whole rest of the cycle work better. And it just wasn't clinically showing up that way. So I'm really grateful that you do have that panel for practitioners.
Yeah, we appreciate that. And I mean, I definitely think that the future of this type of testing is a multi-omics approach. And that was kind of the one of the first stepping stones in developing that. So I appreciate those words. To switch gears for just a moment, You've been hosting a lot of webinars and interviews, actually, with brilliant minds in functional medicine community, with Metagenics Institute, especially as it relates to the current coronavirus pandemic. Can you speak to maybe some of the recent like aha moments or maybe key takeaways that you've had? I know you've talked to a bunch of people, and so there's probably a lot out there, and this is a big question, but I'm just wondering if there's some main things that have really resonated from the recent COVID-19 conversations you've had.
You know, it's interesting because I started these conversations and I was doing them both for Metagenics Institute, but then also the American Nutrition Association. So I think in total, I have interviewed something like, 30 experts across disciplines, everything from immunology, cardiology, people in the field, researchers, clinicians, researcher from Johns Hopkins. So all across the board, it was so kaleidoscopic in view. Yeah. And it was truly a gift for me to be able to ask the questions I wanted to know.
Right.
The answers right. To. So here I was like,
you have the big man.
Right
there,
I'm in the driver's seat of having these conversations. This is really great.
Yes.
So when I started in March, and we really geared up quickly with Metagenics Institute, we didn't start with the American Nutrition Association until like that first week in April. But what I noticed going from March into May with these expert talks is that the information that we were getting about COVID-19 and even about the virus itself, SARS-CoV-2, it was changing. And
sure.
So, right. You know, if I look at the first interviews I was doing to the last interviews, the tone, the feeling, even the information was definitely, there was a shift. Like initially, I think people were trying to crack the nut of all things immunity and nutrition.
Yeah.
So
right.
I can remember I had a number of people that I was talking to and they were all talking about protocols. Like, okay, these are my doses for melatonin, vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin C. These are the other nutrients. And there was almost kind of like this freneticism around a protocol. Like, we need this quick. We need
right.
this quick. Like, what's going to save us?
Yeah.
And then we kind of morphed into discussions about what we were learning about the manifestation of COVID-19, that it had perhaps not just respiratory aspects, but maybe more oxygenation aspects related to the ACE2 receptor. And so now people started to think about this a bit differently, that it's not all the immune system, that maybe we need to be thinking about comorbidities, people that already have cardiometabolic syndrome, that have hypertension, that, you know, is it the virus or is it the milieu in which the virus has taken hold?
Yeah.
And I really like what Jeff Bland, who has been a mentor and friend to me over all these years, and I've had the great privilege of working with him, but one of the things that he said in his interviews, and I got to interview him twice through this, you know, on both sides, Metagenics Institute and ANA, but essentially, you know, he was really speaking to not so much looking on the outside of trying to see how we can fear the virus, but rather to embolden and empower ourselves to get to know our bodies differently. And so getting to know our environment, looking at toxic burden, a lot about this has been coming out. You know, why was Wuhan, why was New York City, why was Seattle, why were these all epicenters, Northern Italy? You know, I had the chance to speak with a medical doctor who was actually in Northern Italy at the end of March when all of this really hit. And so I was asking him, I said, you know, this is so counterintuitive. I think of the Mediterranean diet and all of those plant foods. Why Italy?
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Just, it felt like an anomaly.
Right.
But, you know, I don't think that all parts of Italy are created equal in how they are following this kind of dietary pattern, right? There's a lot of variability. And, you know, they also have a more aging population and different other like there's greater incidence of smoking and, you know, so we were learning different things. And then as we ended a lot of these talks, what we were coming into was looking at stress, looking at fear, looking at socioeconomic status, and how do people maintain their immune activity. So I think it was very interesting to see the progression that initially I was even feeling it myself as an interviewer, like, oh my gosh, you know, so much stress, so much fear.
Yeah.
But then as I was out of these, it was like, oh my gosh, what do? Like the stress of people being at home, overeating, not exercising. I go to the grocery store, I see the processed foods off the shelves.
Sure.
I see the produce
right.
still replete. You know, what does that
yep.
say? But to give a specific, you know, I'm giving you the broad brush here, but if I get, and I did speak to Jeff Bland, but there was an interesting talk with Dr. Michael Schneider. I probably come back to this one over and over again. He is the researcher. I think he was at UCLA, and he would wear, for years, he was wearing 7 different metrics all over his body, like different devices. Uh-huh. I mean, wow. I think he started biohacking, right?
Yeah.
So he was talking about how we can start to see these subtle changes in our physiology with these small devices, and how he identified his preclinical Lyme condition way before it would have ever been diagnosed in the medical system. And so I thought about that. You know, that was really, I just had so many questions for him in terms of, like, what are the devices you're wearing?
Right.
What can we be looking at, especially with COVID-19, oxygenation, looking at pulse ox, looking at heart rate, simple things that are agnostic to many different types of practitioners, not just wedded to a certain medical paradigm. Mm-hmm. Certain things that we can do. And as Jeff Bland would say, if you don't measure it, you won't change it.
Yeah.
So I do think that that's important.
Yeah.
Data's compelling. Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense too. I mean, I've heard Dr. Bland talked about how, you know, the question of is COVID a lifestyle ailment, right, essentially at its core,
yeah, or,
you know, is it exposing the lifestyle issues that underlie all of these particular comorbidities? And we had this individual, Vivek Menon, from Elite HRV, one of the HRV testing companies, and just putting all those pieces together of stress management and HPA axis dysfunction, and thinking about how much of this has impacted and just, you know, really put a huge damper on heart rate variability, HPA axis balance, and then all the other aspects, like you were mentioning, the you know, the addiction, or whether you want to call it addiction, to processed foods, and just, you know, all these things that we turn to when we're under that type of pressure as well.
Exactly. Yeah, it's important to be. And one of the things that came out of this, to your point about, you know, just stress level, one of the things that came out of this with May being Mental Health Awareness Month was I created a food and mood tracker for people. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, there, again, I do think that this is an opportunity. This time, even though it's a time of crisis, there's a time of opportunity here for us as well, depending on how we see it, how we can be helping people to get healthier by measuring these things, by, and these devices in and of themselves are just tools for people to get to know their bodies better.
Right.
Right.
And I know one of the biggest things that has been talked about, especially when I think of Genova and testing, I think of vitamin D. There's been a lot of discussion about vitamin D and all of the publications on that in COVID-19. Are people more susceptible if they have low vitamin D, and then not being able to get to the doctor to actually measure their vitamin D?
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think everything you said is spot on. I mean, the more that we can become informed, the better our decisions will be about our health.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't unknow what you now know.
Right.
It's like it becomes part, whether consciously or subconsciously, part of your daily fabric of decisions.
Yeah. And I love the fact that even a simple conversation like that, that's been happening with vitamin D and whether lower vitamin D levels put you at risk for more severe manifestations, has brought up the question of, well, is that also part of the lifestyle element? You know, is it something where really we can think we can just take some vitamin D over the counter? Sure, that might help a little bit, but how much of the low vitamin D is a reflection of the lifestyle status as well, and what we really need to get back to focusing on? So I just think that, as you said before, the entire pandemic has really shifted our minds to think about lifestyle and all these factors in a different way.
Yes. And that's a really good point, because, you know, looking at the data on the Spanish flu and putting people out in the sun, and the issue of sunlight and people being outside, being in nature, making sure that we replenish our biomes. We're smelling the air. We're being in the soil with gardening. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, is it lifestyle, or is it just we haven't eaten the foods that are enriched in vitamin D? I think it's all of the above.
Yeah.
I think these nutrients are signalers into what we're doing overall, right? It's really a composite.
Yeah. And you say very often how, you know, food is not just nourishment, it's information. And, you know, that kind of leads me to, you're going to be doing an upcoming breakfast at the Now Online IFM Annual International Conference this year, titled Phytonutrients and Immune Health, How Plants Provide Protection During the Pandemic. Any sneak peeks or clinical pearls this talk as a teaser? Yeah.
Well, you had asked about my experience with having all these experts weigh in. And one of the things that I noticed was that There seemed to be an alignment amongst integrative medical systems. So I had the opportunity to interview people in the functional medicine realm, people talking about traditional Chinese medicine, and even some of the Ayurvedic herbs and approaches were surfacing. And so within this talk, what I'm doing is unifying all these different integrative approaches and showing how all of them are connected through plants. Mm-hmm. And this has come out in the scientific literature. If we look at all of the different phytonutrients that are being used against COVID-19 and what some of the protocols are. So what I'm doing is I'm presenting, how do we get our immune system more in alignment? And one of the ways is to connect to nature. And one of the ways that we can connect to nature is by eating plant foods that signal to us something about our environment so we can restore and repattern that framework. And so in the talk, I'm providing a small overview of that and then really looking at the breadth of different herbs, botanicals, mechanistically, how do they work? I've been collecting throughout this whole time all of the research, and pretty much every day or every other day, I'm going into PubMed. I'm looking at I've been posting these on my Facebook page, some of them, some of the studies that are coming out. I've never seen a plethora of articles like what we're seeing now with COVID-19, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of the journals are providing open access because they feel like it's the right to the public to provide this information. So I've been culling all of those, and what the viewer of this presentation will get is the distillation of being on the pulse with the science, what's out there, what are people using clinically, and not focusing too wide. I'm making it very specific to plants and phytonutrients and how we can harness them more effectively during this time.
Cool. Well, you spoke of your Facebook, but I'll tell you, Michael and I stalk your Instagram because it's probably the most stunning social media posts. They're so artistic and beautiful.
That's true.
It is
true. Amazing.
They're beautiful. And so with that, we know you have that food and mood tracker that you just talked about. And you often speak a lot about the importance of meditations and visualizations and affirmations. And during this COVID time, it becomes even more crucial to incorporate these practices. But with that, it's hard to do so. Do you have any tips for people listening how to help their patients or themselves integrate these mind-body practices?
Well, you know, I like the idea of infusing them into other things that we're doing. So not to have like separate carved out time where we go and meditate. I at least for myself, I like to do a little bit of layering. Some people would call it multitasking, but I don't think it's multitasking. Okay. I think it's layering for synergy. So instead of just sitting and meditating, actually being in the garden. Mm-hmm. So I have just had this call to being out more in nature. I live in more of a natural setting. I live in Washington State, and we live on 5 acres of forest. So this whole opportunity of being at home for me has led to me being outside more. So one of the ways that I can engage in meditation is not just sitting on a chair, closing my eyes, but actually being outside and losing myself and planting a tomato plant. You know, just something like that. Or even with visualization, you know, it's really interesting here because, as I mentioned to start, one of the conduits to my own personal healing has been through art, through enabling whatever is being felt within me to be expressed on paper or through paint. Mm. And so with visualization, I think it's really important to realize that in whatever way that people feel resonates for them. And most people, when they hear my story about painting, they start asking me all these questions. What kind of easel do you have? How big was that canvas?
I need to recreate it.
Yeah, I'm like, wait a minute. You're losing the spirit of the flow of it, right? I don't care if you just have like a ragged old notebook on your
crayon
table. And doodle. Yeah. I mean, in fact, when people see my art and then they say, well, can I commission you to make something? And I always say no, because I feel like the more that I put into that whole rivulet of my energy, some kind of constraint or some kind of expectation, I feel like it takes on a different feeling than what it's meant for me to do. So my path of visualization is to have something outward with creating some kind of flow using color. For other people, that might be, it could be one of those adult coloring books, right? Mm. Where you just get some colored pencils. It could be doodling. It could be, you know, any number of things. It could just even be taking beautiful photographs of maybe a sunset or of a mountain range, or even looking at them. You know, right. It doesn't have to be so sophisticated and time consuming. I think that when people hear these things, meditation, visualization, affirmation, it feels distant. Mm-hmm. And these things are so accessible. You can make them accessible within seconds. And even the affirmation one. So I have a personal affirmation for this COVID-19 time that we're in. And initially, I was it just kind of came to me, and I felt like, okay, my mantra for this time is, I am open to possibilities. And I keep saying it to myself. And in fact, if you were at my house, you would see that by my bathroom mirror, I have a little card with an affirmation on it. If you were in my kitchen, you would see that you think of people's refrigerators, right? And how they have all these things on the refrigerator, whether it's photographs right. or statements or quotes.
Yeah.
It could be something as simple as, you know, you cut something out of a magazine because you like the statement and you just put it up there, right? Yeah. But the more that we reprogram our mind, because so much of our stress response starts not with the adrenals. It ends with the adrenals.
That's
it starts
right.
upstream in the brain.
In the head.
Right.
You know?
And right.
so it's like if we are reprogramming our stress response by the inputs that we are getting, then less work for those poor little adrenal glands.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And so much of that is related to what you are expecting as compared to what is actually mm-hmm. happening, which makes a mantra like yours in today's day and age so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because you're
definitely.
Letting go of that expectation.
You bet. Yeah, I feel like, you know, all different kinds of ways to do that, whether, you know, you can journal them, you can, and things might change.
Yeah.
You know, I also think, let me just say on the heels of all of that, that it's really important. I mentioned a number of examples for myself, and I mentioned them all in solo spheres. I do think that there's potentiation when we do this in a group setting, which is why I have pivoted to doing even more online. I mean, I have to, just out of necessity. I already had an online education business, and now I've ramped it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think they're in this communal space. We need to share affirmations with each other. We need to share our visualizations. We need to come together. There was a global meditation several weeks ago, and I even put that up on my Facebook page. You know, it was like 7:30 at night on a Saturday. So it's almost like, you know, how do we come together within the space of that mind-body interface as a collective, not just solo, but it's almost like the science of prayer, that by having intention, by having some kind of mood state, it can generate a ripple through effect. And that is even greater when you have more people involved.
Yeah. I like that.
Great point.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing that. I think that's really, that's motivating sentiment and something that we all could hear over and over and over again,
right.
myself included, during these times.
It's harder to adopt, right?
So,
right.
You know, I was wondering also, you mentioned your website and how much you're doing on there as far as education. Can you talk a little bit about the programs that you offer on your website? You have things like the 21 Days of Creativity, which you were kind of talking about the importance of creativity in your own path. You have things like Healing with the Rainbow of Health. What are some of the things that people can expect from some of these programs that you offer on your website right now?
Yeah, so I have a number of more self-study on-demand programs that people can sign up. They're very low budget, and so anywhere between $21 to $56. The course on creativity, it's through Daily Ohm, and so they just ask for whatever you can give within a certain price range. So my intent with all of those was to have self-guided programs for people with short video clips and email every day. And in some cases, there's a workbook or a guidebook. Like one of my favorites is that 21 days of living a more creative life. And so I walk people through how we have the 7 creatives that all of us share, whether it's a food creative, a flowing creative, a thinking creative, a moving creative, speaking creative, a visual creative, and a connection creative. And so you get to do a checklist. You can figure out which one is strongest within you. And then I walk you through in this sequence where you spend a number of days on each of the creatives, and it's more exploratory. So there's a guidebook, and you can watch videos of me talking about each of them. So those are more self-study. I also have a more online directed live program that we're starting June 1st. And it's called Healing with the Rainbow of Health. And so what we do there is we spend 7 months 7 months and much more of an immersive type of an experience where people come together with me in an online experience every 2 weeks. We're coming together. And I think that I've really shifted my teaching into less didactic, less words, and more practicalities. And so when we come together in these webinars, we're going to have like some tool that really speaks to the theme that we're addressing. And the theme that we're addressing in this 7-month immersion program is, I'm calling it the rhythms that run us. Mm-hmm. And so if we look at the diurnal rhythm, the circadian rhythm, the seasonal rhythm, our biorhythms of our organs, I feel like we've lost touch with rhythms. Sure. You know, we're up late at night. We use electricity. We have really defied the laws of nature in many ways. And I do think that the immune system is very responsive to when we are in alignment with the rhythms of nature. And so we're going to be focusing on that as part of this, like monthly rhythms, hormonal rhythms. I mean, if you think about it, we are so cyclical. We're not, you know, there's a thing about pathways, but pathways go in circles and in, you know, all kinds of different configurations. We're not linear beings. We are very rhythmic. We're cyclical, and we're run by the sun ultimately. And the sun is connected to other things, right? And so like there's this whole science of chronotherapeutics, chrononutrition, dosing dietary supplements at certain times of the day. Like one of the speakers that I was interviewing, Mansoor Mohammed, who is a geneticist, we were talking about vitamin D and when people supplement with vitamin D. And so he mentioned how we need to take vitamin D during the day. And that made sense to me because when would we be getting it?
Right.
I mean, right? And so then I started to go into the literature like, okay, is there any data to show us when we should be taking certain supplements? But the field of supplementation, I would say, is too nascent. It's too, we are just still trying to justify that people even need supplements.
Right.
We're not even at the level of
when. Right.
So, but I think if we do it intuitively, like melatonin makes sense to be doing that right before bedtime, 60 to 90 minutes. Vitamin D, when is the peak of our exposure to the sun? It's 12 noon.
Right.
For the most part, right? Between that 12 and 2 period. So to be taking vitamin D, maybe not even with breakfast, but maybe at lunch when the sun would be peaking. So yeah, it's caused me to think along these lines. And I think that that's really emerging. And I can't wait for when Genova is going to have a test to look at our clock genes. So you take a sample and you start to look at the hepatic oscillations, the kidney renal oscillations. Different part, because I think, you know, if we were to look inside the rhythmic motions of all of these organs, and this is something that the ancient traditions were talking about long ago, like the certain hourly rhythms of certain organs and why you get an exacerbation of certain things at certain times, like more lung activity. My husband's an acupuncturist. And so when I look through his books on TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, you know, they block out the day in 2-hour blocks.
Yep.
And each of those 2-hour blocks connects to an organ system.
Yep.
So I think we've got very definitive timeframes that resonate and perhaps give us even more activity from that nutrient than we would otherwise have.
Well, now you've done it. The rest of our week is going to be dedicated to making a chronobiology panel, Deanna.
Yep, I'll get right on that.
Here we go.
Now you've done it. I like it. I want that panel.
Awesome.
Absolutely. I'll be your first. I'll be lining up.
Yay.
And, just like when you had the methylation panel.
Right.
I mean, that was very innovative. And we need something on the chrono side because there's just not. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the research is in animals that have opposite rhythms to humans. You know, rats and mice, they are awake at night and they're sleeping during the day. But yet we do the studies on chronotherapeutics in those models.
Right.
So we've got some flaws. We need some better studies there.
All right. We're going to figure it out.
Yep. I know we're doing this weekend.
Well.
So thank you so much for being on. You know, just a few other places that people can find you. So they can, if people are looking to find Deanna Minnick's work, you can find her on Instagram at Deanna Minnick, website deannaminnick.com, and also your books as well. I want to make sure and plug the whole detox book and the Rainbow Diet are excellent. So those are just a few places that people can find Deanna.
But Michael, I think you missed one question.
Well, you know, we do have like one kind of off-the-cuff question that we tend to ask people that tends to be a little bit on the sillier side. So I hope you don't mind me going in a little bit of the sillier direction.
Those are my favorite questions. Awesome. Those are absolutely... Okay. I never prepare for these podcasts, so I hope you don't mind.
No, that's perfect. So we normally ask people whether they like sandwiches or not or something like that, but I really wanted to pin you down on this because we know that you are so focused on eating the rainbow and right. incorporating the different colors. Do you have a favorite color?
You know, I feel like I've been asked that question before, and I love that question, and I often ask other people that question, and I feel like when I choose a color, it's like a mother saying that she likes
I was just going to say that, like,
another, right?
Which is your favorite kid, Deanna?
Right. But I have to be honest with you. I do have a favorite color.
Okay.
Ever since I was probably 7 is when I remember this very distinctly. I love the color emerald green. Oh. Emerald green. Like, I would wear it all the time. I remember wearing this emerald green dress. I always liked the color emerald. I like green in general, but, you know, there are many shades of green, and sure. I like the deeper hue of green.
Sure.
So I think that that's valid to ask me. You know, I have a niece. I just have one niece, and so she's very precious. And when she was first born, I was asking my sister, I said, we need to figure out what her favorite color is.
Aww.
And so... before she could even talk, I remember she was 2 because my sister videotaped the whole thing. And before she could talk, and my sister gave her a book with all these colors, and she sat it down on her lap. She was sitting in this little chair, and she was asking her, she says, Ellie, which is your favorite color? And so Ellie, even though she, I wasn't sure how much, I think she understood because she pointed to purple.
Aww.
And then she looked at my sister and she kept pointing to purple. And aww. Even now, this girl, she's 6 and like everything is purple-fied. Like she wears purple and she's kind of moved over into pink too, purple pink, but yeah. She's obsessed with purple. Her room is purple. Everything I buy, I even bought her like for fun this, you know, just everything I buy her is purple. Let's just say it that way.
Awesome.
It's just
awesome.
Crazy. But I do think that we gravitate to these colors at mm-hmm. different times of our lives. Sometimes they're with us our whole life. And this is where when in functional medicine, we hear food is medicine. I have said that color is medicine. Sometimes we need to be around a color. It's amazing how many people are in drib drab environments. They're in a gray cubicle. They were black, white, brown, tan, beige. They're not wearing any spectrum.
Yeah.
Right.
And when people do my programs, one of the things that I've noticed that they say back to me is not that they just ate more colorful food. Mm-hmm. They started waking up the color in their entire environment, painting the walls, changing their furniture, changing right. their cube to put like a rainbow in that cubicle.
Yeah.
I love
so,
it.
I really want to leave your listeners with that concept. So, you know, I'm glad that you asked me about my favorite color because I do want to leave the listeners with the idea that color is medicine. It's not just the colors of the food that we are eating. It's what we're seeing through our eyes and how that changes our mood.
Yeah. And just to kind of follow up with that emerald green, in your whole self questionnaire, green is love and it represents the heart, right? So I think that's just very fitting for who you are. We're just so thankful to know you and to be friends with you and so thankful that you were able to come on the show today, Deanna.
Yeah, thanks so much, Deanna. It's been a major pleasure.
Thank you both. It's been a joy.
Well, that went well.
You're bringing that one back, huh?
You know how I do.
It went beyond well. Are you kidding? That was great.
I'm not kidding. That was excellent.
It was.
That was a lot of fun, too. I think there was a good amount of interesting content in that interview. You might want to go back and listen to it again. I know I'm going to.
And some of it's really profound, if you think about it. Different
That's
way
just
to look
the type
at
of person Deanna Minnick is. She's a profound sort of person.
She is. I love it.
So something for us all to aspire to, I think.
Great idea. Well, do you think we should do a disclaimer?
Yes, I do think we should, and by we, I mean Oliver.
Oh, good.
The contents of the lab report are meant for educational purposes only and not to be misconstrued as medical diagnosis or treatment advice.
Awesome.
Thanks,
thank you,
Oliver.
Patty.
What?
Let's get out of here and get to the next show.
Good, because these get better and better.
You just get better and better.
Aw.
Next time on the lab report... we're going to talk to Dom D'Agostino.
Yeah, we're going to geek out on some interesting biochemistry.
I love geeking out about biochem.
He's so smart. You've been listening to The Lab Report. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our podcast, rate us, and leave us a review. To learn more about Genova Diagnostics, visit our website at gdx.net. There you'll find information on specific testing, educational resources, and how to connect with our show.
call us at 1-800-522-4762 or email us at podcast@gdx.net.
Hey, Patty.
What?
What does it sound like when eight Olivers talk at the same time?
I don't know.
That's all about.
It's a British cacophony.
Oh, Patty, that's terrific.
Thanks, Oliver.